Listen to the voices of our world.
Every rational person sort of takes a deep breath when they think of the idea of somebody being put to death by mistake.
People put to death who are not guilty and just morally opposed to the death penalty.
How many of those that were in fact innocent have we killed?
I just don't think people realize that the United States is almost alone in the whole world in imposing the death penalty.
We're finally touching people with an awareness of the true impact and the true horror of a system that takes human life.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. The Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution, beginning in 1789, outlawed cruel and unusual punishment. Prior to that time, while rare, stoning and burning at the stake were still possible. Until 1890, hanging was the most common form of capital punishment in the U.S., but it could be very slow and obviously torturous and could sometimes even end in decapitation. After a fairly vicious fight, although not to the finish, between inventors Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse, the electric chair became the method of choice until far too many botched executions and the smell of burning flesh brought on the use of the gas chamber in 1937. Each new method of execution was said to be more humane. Now most states use lethal injection, but in the last 6 months, several cases challenging the efficacy of that method have come before the Supreme Court. Today we'll talk with two opponents of the death penalty, actor, activist, and chair of Death Penalty Focus, Mike Farrell, and the 38th First Lady of the United States, Rosalynn Carter.
So what happens when the heart just stops?
California state officials postponed the execution of San Quentin inmate Michael Morales, saying, "We are unable to comply with the judge's order that a medical professional administer the lethal injection." Now, the Supreme Court has allowed Clarence E. Hill, convicted of a 1983 murder, to challenge lethal injection as the method of his intended execution on the basis of Section 1983 of the Civil Rights Act. In most states, the lethal injection method uses a combination of three chemicals. The first, to anesthetize. The second, to paralyze the muscles that permit breathing. And the third, to stop the heart. But medical experts have recently described that the drug combo, as currently prescribed, actually causes an inmate to appear unconscious while suffocating and experiencing the blinding pain of coronary arrest. Now, if you're saying to yourself, "So the heck what? The dude killed somebody." Well, even the forensic pathologist who invented the lethal injection protocol, Dr. J. Chapman, is now saying he no longer recommends the three-drug method, but the simpler and kinder method used by veterinarians, putting an animal down, an overdose of a barbiturate, sodium pentobarbital. So the Supreme Court is being forced to consider that lethal injection, as currently administered, may breach the Eighth Amendment's cruel and unusual punishment. Several states following Illinois' lead have proposed moratoriums on the death penalty, noting that scientific advances have brought about 122 exonerations of persons who we may well have put to death for a crime they did not commit. But the death penalty is a deterrent, you say. Well, a death sentence is usually given to those who've taken a life, which is either committed spontaneously, as in a botched robbery, or in a planned homicide, wherein the murderer assumes he or she has committed the perfect crime and will not get caught. Either way, they're not thinking about their own death. Now, you may only know Mike Farrell as an actor, and you probably best remember him as B.J. Honeycutt in the TV series MASH, but Mike Farrell is also a writer and active on a number of human rights issues, and is chair of Death Penalty Focus. Our Kathy Golden talks with Mike Farrell. On the weekend, I was at the 85th birthday party for Father Dan Berrigan.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep, and there was a girl, she was quite young, I would say 13, 14, and the back of her T-shirt mesmerized me. It said, "Why do we kill people who kill people to show that killing people is wrong?"
Yes, indeed. Good question. when Americans fully understand the downside, if you will, of the death penalty, not only morally, but also economically, socially, and in a number of other ways, that they will give it up. And in fact, the recent Gallup poll suggests that while if you just simply ask the public the question, do you support the death penalty, yes or no, a little over 60% of the people will say yes, because they've been conditioned to do so. And it draws on all their old childhood fears and the kinds of games that prosecutors and pro-death people play. But if offered the option of the death penalty or life without possibility of parole, according to the recent Gallup poll, for the first time, people support life without parole over the death penalty as a response to violent or capital crime. So I think we're making progress, and I think we're finally touching people with an awareness of the true impact and the true horror of a system that takes human life. And some of those impacts are not so readily available unless you look. We are entrapping innocent people on death row, as has been demonstrated by the release now of over 120, I think it's 122 or 123 by now, who have been charged with the murder, tried and convicted and sentenced to death, and spent in some cases many, many years on death row awaiting the sword, if you will, and ultimately have been shown to be wrongly convicted and freed. But that's only a piece of it. Then the issue is how many of those that were in fact innocent have we killed and not ever fully dealt with it. There are three cases now that have come up in recent months that indicate that we have begun to peer under that ugly rock. And the issue of racism, of course, suffuses the death system. It's really, if you trace its history and the places mostly in which it is still used, you realize that the death penalty is a continuing relic of the old slavery system and the segregation system. And beyond that, just on a pure economic level, because of the safeguards that were built into the system by the Supreme Court in order to maintain its constitutionality, it is hideously expensive, 2 to 3 times more expensive than is simple capital trial or simple trial and maintaining somebody in prison for an average of 40 years. So there are any number of questions about the fairness, the efficacy, and the appropriateness of the penalty that we are now finally getting people to pay attention to, and I think ultimately is going to result in the death, if you will, of the death penalty.
It's interesting you point out that there are movements in several states now all of a sudden to put together referendums on moratoriums, and I think it may have started a few years back with Governor Ryan in Illinois, but now we have Alabama, Georgia, and your own state, California, looking to ask voters to think about a moratorium. What do you think is behind it? Is it the changes in what DNA has done to the justice system?
Well, DNA has a lot to do with it. Unfortunately, DNA is much misunderstood, but because of the publicity attendant to people being freed, you know, the Innocence Project, which has been really the pioneer of the whole DNA issue, has been responsible for over 160 people being freed from prison, only about 15 of those off death row. But nonetheless, it illustrates very vividly the wrongheadedness and the frequency of error in the criminal justice system in general. So it's raised for people the awareness of mistakes. And I think everybody, every rational person, sort of takes a deep breath when they think of the idea of somebody being put to death by mistake or being put in prison and incarcerated for any number of years by mistake, or sometimes not by mistake, sometimes by the wrongful application of the laws on the part of ambitious prosecutors or police who are more intent on getting a conviction and or getting somebody off the streets or putting the end to a troublesome criminal case than they are about being judicious about whether or not the individual is guilty. So there are a number of questions. DNA has a lot to do with it. I think it is an accumulation of events, developments. Governor Ryan's extraordinarily courageous action in Illinois was a thunderclap to the system. Prior to that, Sister Helen Prejean's book, Dead Man Walking, and the subsequent film based on her book, and her personally powerful work. She travels the country, travels the world, as you probably know. Speaking to any audience that will hear her has had a devastating impact on the system. So between Sister Helen and Governor Ryan brought this issue right into the face of those people who didn't want to look at it, the question of the innocent on death row. And then, as you suggest, now there have been, since I've been involved, which is over 25 years now, there have been people who simply understood that it was wrong for us to be killing our fellow citizens, no matter what they were charged with or convicted of doing, who have been working to try to find various ways to undercut the state's ability to kill. And they have been, I think, emboldened and strengthened by all of these other developments, has resulted in a kind of confluence of energies that has created now an ongoing moratorium in Illinois. Governor Ryan's moratorium continued even after he left office, and his successor, who is a supporter of the death penalty, has continued the moratorium there. New Jersey has just established a moratorium by law. New York has a moratorium in effect because its Supreme Court held that its death penalty was unconstitutional, and now its legislature refuses to make the necessary changes, so they've have an effective moratorium in place. Kansas has done the same. Their Supreme Court has held their death penalty unconstitutional, and so far it has not been fixed. And as you mentioned, there are a number of other states with various movements toward moratoria here in California, in Arkansas, I think you mentioned, certainly North Carolina. And a couple of years ago, it's little known, but a couple of years ago, New Hampshire's legislature, both houses, passed a bill to eliminate the death system. And unfortunately, it was vetoed by then-Governor Jean Shaheen, who had political ambitions of her own. So across the country and across the world, I mean, every day we read about another country that has given up the death system because they recognize that it's inappropriate, unnecessary, or it doesn't fit with the modern view. So the United States stands out more and more as the sort of sore thumb issue. So the momentum is clearly moving toward the elimination of the death system worldwide, and I think we are one of the last and sort of most embarrassing holdouts.
Yeah, I think it's the Philippine government that just recently outlawed it. And the United States got rid of it once for a while, and then we went back to it. What do you think it is in our mentality that clings to this rather than offering in every state to every juror the option of life without parole?
Well, in almost every state, if not every state that has the death penalty on its books, they have a life without parole option. But for example, Texas, which is the sort of number one hit state in the country, its prosecutors campaigned very vigorously against a life without parole option because they feared that if they offered the option to juries, they would not be able to get as many death verdicts. What Texas prosecutors had been able to do in the past, because they didn't have life without parole as an option, was to say, if you don't give us the right to kill this person, he will be walking the streets or could be walking the streets again in the future. Now, that's pretty unrealistic, but it, in fact, is the way in which these guys rationalized and rationalized their position and propagandized the juries. So the option is there in most instances, but a lot of people continue to believe that there is no such thing as life without parole. A lot of people continue to believe that the people go into prison and it's a kind of turnstile operation where 10 minutes later or 7 years later they're out again on the streets terrorizing people. And that's a sad, I think, result of the kind of political propaganda that has been used over time. I really believe that in our country, the death system has very little to do with justice and has most to do with politics.
So what happens when the heart just stops?
If you are for the death penalty, could you support a moratorium while the fairness of its application is examined? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org. or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.